on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and it's Friday, May 2nd, 2025. And as you are well aware, I imagine, the market has been up for 9 straight days, the S&P 500 closing in on a pretty rare event, being positive for 9 days in a row. But if you only look at the past 9 days, you ignore the whole story. And that's what we here at Invest Talk try to do for our listeners, for our viewers, each and every day. Bring the full story directly to them to help make them better and more informed investors. Now, another way we try and make people better and more informed investors is through our Invest Talk Wealth webinar series. I mentioned it. We've been mentioning it for a while. It was on Wednesday. We really appreciate everybody who showed up. But it is now available on our YouTube channel under the playlist for webinars. Just head over to YouTube, type in Invest Talk with 2 T's. It is on custom indexing. I think it's interesting, and you may find it interesting too. Now, that being said, because the objective for this podcast and radio program is to help you become a better investor, we will bring to the table some educational items and some actionable items to help you along your journey, but we cannot do it for you. And because of that, the most important part of this show is you. And you contribute through your finance and investment questions via voicemail, on our YouTube channel, in the comments section, or through your live calls throughout the show. Now, in just a bit, we'll talk about the market performance for the day and run down those show topics I have for you. But first, let's tackle this caller question.
Hi, Justin or Luke. I was hoping to get your quick analysis on Sterling Infrastructure, ticker STRL. How do you think this will do in this environment? Do you think it's expensive right now? I have it right now. I'm thinking about selling out of it and consolidating my portfolio. Thank you.
Sterling Infrastructure, ticker STRL. It's a $4.9 billion market cap company. It is an infrastructure company. So they are a US-based construction and infrastructure services firm. They got 3 different divisions, right? They're building solutions for residential and commercial concrete construction. They're transportation solutions. So they provide services for highways and bridges, think public utilities or public resources. And then they're e-infrastructure solutions, and that's data centers. Now, we have seen, especially through Microsoft, through other companies, that their spending on data centers have waned a little bit. We talked yesterday about the threat that tariffs are posing to US AI dominance. And so for a company that derives a decent amount of its revenue from that segment, right, that makes up about 44% of its total revenue and really has been the big driver of growth. It's why in Q4 of 2024, revenue was up 3% year over year. Their full year performance had a record revenues of $2.15 billion. It was primarily from that one segment, up 15% in operating income year over year. I mean, look at that growth, 13.4% on an annualized basis. Their margins, pretty solid and growing. 2024 was a heck of a year, 12.2% net margin. Great year for cash flow. Now, they did issue a bit of shares over the past 5 years, though nothing too concerning. They don't really have much debt, only $369 million. Bit of short interest out there, 6.68%. That could be because, you know, the growth that they've seen over the past year, up 64.57% in the past 52 weeks, up 16.3% in the past 3 months, up 3.55% today. Really some positioning ahead of earnings. And so, you know, anytime you go into earnings, you tend to see a lot of positioning that is high volume. That's what you see on this chart right here, but more likely based upon bets on what the earnings and outlook is going to look like going forward. Now, it is a solid company, right? Data centers has been a big driver. AI has been a big driver, the big driver of the market over the past couple of years. That's why the revenue is up 50% year over year. But the threads we talked about yesterday give me pause in terms of buying it. It's run up a lot. The market thinks it's a little bit too expensive. If you were considering it, certainly would wait till a couple weeks after earnings for the market to digest that. Keep it on my watch list for now. Certainly would not buy any more at the moment. That is Sterling Infrastructure Inc., ticker STRL. We've got a lot of ground to cover in the next 45 minutes or so. Here's a little bit of what we're going to talk about. My main focus point concerns this headline. Fewer than half of Americans plan to travel this summer. A recent Bankrate survey reveals that the affordability factor has been cited by the 65% of expected non-travelers, and this group may be budgeting for staycations. Also, we'll touch on how U.S. equity funds, even though U.S. equity markets have had a heck of a 9 days, have seen outflows for the third straight week, suggesting still some investor caution. We'll also go back to the trade front, where Japan says that U.S. Treasury holdings could be one of the cards they play in trade talks. What does that mean for the strength of their position? And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll touch on Europe's rebuilding of its industrial, or rather military industrial sector. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on SSNC, which is SS&C Technologies Holdings, Inc., one on cash out refinances, as well as some questions that came in from the comment section of the InvestTalk YouTube channel. And of course, hopefully I hear directly from you over the next hour. Now we're going to do a break, and on the other side, we'll talk briefly about today's market activity and take more of your questions from the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is made better when listeners add their voices.
My name is Robert, and I'm from Florida. Great show. I learned so much from just listening to you.
Hi, this is Susan from New Jersey. I'm calling about AXOA.
How much of the information that came out today on the whole AI play with DeepSeek and all that, how much of that information can you really trust?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
I am very much a person that does not trust Chinese data.
Net income is growing and margins are staying pretty steady.
Now let's go take a live call. Paul from Palm Desert.
Let's go to George from San Mateo, who has a question about index funds.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little. Call InvestTalk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time.
Is that a good strategy or should I be looking at other things?
888-99-CHART. The numbers are in. InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Before we get to more of your questions, let's talk a little bit about the market today. U.S. stocks were higher, ending a bit off of their best levels, showing a lot of strength on the day. As I mentioned, the S&P 500 posted its ninth straight gain in a row. The Dow up 1.39%, S&P 500 up 1.47%, NASDAQ up 1.51%, Russell 2000 very strong. An index has been lagging behind over the past couple days, up 2.27% on the day. Who did well today? Well, semis did well, China Tech did well, GLP-1s, trucking, parcels, logistic names doing well today. Big Tech also saw some solid gains outside of Apple, who had some disappointing forward-looking guidance in their earnings the previous day. I'd say that was probably the most notable underperformer on the day. Other underperformers looks like auto suppliers, some chemical names, video games, and multi-line insurance not doing particularly well. On a relative basis, that is. Dollar index was down 30 basis points after a pretty strong rally on Thursday. Gold finished up 70 basis points. Crude oil ending down 1.6% in pretty choppy trading. A lot of focus on the possibility for OPEC Plus to raise output for the second half of the year. And so what really drove Market activity today, some stronger than expected macro data, non-farm payrolls, more than expected this morning, helping to alleviate some of those recent growth fears. Though, again, we talked about this yesterday in terms of time of reference, to not react or overreact too much to macro data. It doesn't really fully encompass all the effects that we could see in the near future. The flip side of this, stronger economy means a more hawkish Fed, less likely to see rate cuts in the immediate term. There's also some good news on the trade de-escalation front. I mean, potentially good news. I'm not really sure how much changed exactly, but statements from the Chinese government saying that they will start to think about potentially responding to recent U.S. overtures on trade talks. Again, it seems like their core decision framework still incorporates the necessity for them to for the U.S. to unilaterally remove tariffs. So not sure how much progress is there, but any news is good news on that front. Also, flow dynamics continue to be cited as supportive for stocks. Systematic strategies potentially starting to relever. Retail, still a resilient dip buyer. On the macro side, we talked about it a little bit. April headline payrolls of 177,000 ahead of the consensus, though the prior 2 months were revised downward by about 58,000. Unemployment rate held steady at 4.2%. Average hourly earnings, about 20 basis points month over month. A bit cooler than expected. And so with all of this, I would say there's still a little bit of risk to the downside in the coming months, right? You're starting to see the impact of tariffs eventually, broader macro uncertainty, the secondary effects of cuts to the federal government, how that'll show up in real data. So things are looking better, certainly from a market perspective, from a macroeconomic perspective. We'll have to wait and see. Now, as you know, we have a show that is available on YouTube now. And while you're over there, if you have a question that you really need answered, just leave it there. And we'll get to it as soon as we can. So let's get to one right now on XYZ and Uber. It says, wondering what you think of ticker XYZ. I got into it in the 80s and have just seen it go down so much. I don't have a lot invested in that stock, but wondering if you think this is a sell or wait and see. If a second question is allowed, I'm wondering what you also think about Uber, as it appears to look strong in the recent months. Let's take a look at XYZ first. XYZ is Block Inc. It is a commercial services company. And what it does is it creates ecosystems for customer audiences. So they operate through Square, through Cash App. It's payment processing and payment services. It's a fintech company. It's a fairly large, about $38 billion market cap. Its debt picture doesn't look too crazy, about $6.6 billion in debt. But, you know, it's been relatively weak since 2022. It has not been performing too well, right? This peer-to-peer payment system hasn't been performing too well. And a lot of that could be because of the domination of Apple, because of the domination of PayPal. But, you know, we did just have a recent earnings miss as well. About 6.2 billion EPS came in just a bit below consensus. Shares fell about 20% following the earnings report, down today at about 20%. You know, overall, it seems to be in a worsening position, right? It's down about 33.8% in the past 52 weeks. Year to date, it's down 45.25%. And that's in spite of revenue growing pretty dramatically over the past 5 to 6 years. Now, this is a name that we did hold at a small weight for our clients. It is certainly something that we are reevaluating right now. It is a market earnings reaction. And so anytime there's a market earnings reaction, we wait, we see how the market starts to digest that as we start to digest that as well. For now, we're holding on. We certainly wouldn't buy any additional right now. Going forward, going to make a decision on that name. That is ticker XYZ. Now, looking at Uber, because we do have time before the break, let me pull up Uber. Uber is a rideshare company. It is the more successful, I would say, of the two rideshare companies in that it turned a profit far before Lyft ever did. It's about $178 billion market cap, up 39.72% year to date, up 22.91% over the past 52 weeks. Revenue, up 25.5% on an annualized basis over the past 5 years. Again, they finally turned a profit in 2023. In 2024, margins started to soar at 22.4%. and doing pretty well from that perspective. Now, you know, looking at this, it's growing very well. Uber is growing very, very well. They're scheduled to report earnings on May 7th, so I certainly wouldn't get into it now. Again, we've talked about when we tend to avoid buying and selling in and to and out of names. But I think the one thing that concerns me about Uber, other than the fact that it's a little bit expensive, trading about 30 times forward-looking earnings, trading about 24 times price cash flow, is threats from other companies, right? From autonomous vehicles, from Waymo, from potentially Tesla down the road, should they ever finish that. And so the threat is there. The threat is there. It's done very well. It's going to be interesting to see what earnings does. A little bit too expensive. I would probably hold off a little bit given the run-up and certainly wait for the most recent earnings to come in. That'll be next week. Thanks for watching. Headed into a break. Still to come, my main focus point and more answers to your questions. I encourage you to call me now at InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Luke Guerrero is here now, ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
A little bit of a correction. I had to think about it for a second. You know, things tend to move fast here. We actually don't hold XYZ for our clients, which I guess it's Friday. Sometimes it happens. But my point still stands. You know, it's likely to see maybe a little bit of a bounce after earnings. I certainly would not pick any up. Probably look to sell on the rally. Ticker XYZ, Block Inc. Now, my main focus point concerns this headline. Fewer than half of Americans plan to travel this summer. In fact, only 46% of U.S. adults plan to travel at all. And cost is the top deterrent for the 54% who want to stay home. Now, 65% of non-travelers cite affordability as the main reason. But a lot of that is due to the fact that costs are just rising across the board. 68% of people say that the reason why they want to travel isn't because, or rather that they don't want to travel, isn't because traveling is expensive. It's because everything else is expensive. Now, here's the bad part, and the part that I hope none of you falls into. 29% of travelers plan to take on debt in order to do so, be it through credit cards or buy now, pay later. Who's most likely to go into debt? Unsurprisingly, millennials, 34%, and Gen Z at 31%. Higher income households, it seems like, understandably, tend to travel more. By higher income, we mean $80,000 or more a year. But 29% of them aren't interested in vacationing at all this year. Of those who do plan to travel, domestic travel outpaces international travel, 38 to 15%. Really a switch from what you traditionally see. And staycations, where you stay at home, maybe you don't go to work, you have your whole family, you do a bunch of fun things, is what 10% of people say they're going to do, while 24% say, you know what, if I can't go anywhere, I'm not going to do anything at all. Now, for myself, something I love to use, credit card points and miles, are being used by about 20% of people who are traveling this year. And for some people who have credit cards that allow them to take on interest-free debt, well, this popular debt-free payment method accounts for about 30%, while some are paying in cash about 56%, and through their debit checking accounts, 47%. Incredibly specific numbers here. Amongst those who are traveling, they're seeing costs rise, specifically from hotels, up 15% year over year, and dining up 28% year over year, really continuing to squeeze their budgets. And so the reason why I bring this up is oftentimes when you have deteriorating economies, oftentimes when financial conditions get a little bit harder, people such as us, such as our listeners, such as anybody, feel as though when they can't do things they want to do, and they see on their Instagram or their Facebook or their what have you, their TikToks, and everybody's having fun, that they feel isolated and alone. And so we bring this information to you as a way to remind you, if this If you are part of the 54% of people staying home because you either can't afford it or you just don't feel like doing it, then you're not alone. And to not try and reach for things that are outside of your affordability wheelhouse. Don't take on debt to travel. Don't take on debt to do things that are unnecessary. You can always travel next year. You are not alone. Make the smart financial decision. Have a staycation with the ones you love. Now, I want to briefly mention the newest KPP premium newsletter, which will be distributed tomorrow. This week in the KPP Insights section, we talk about growth and GDP. Obviously, a pretty hot button issue this week. Something that everybody should talk about, something that everybody should be thinking about, something that everybody needs to understand. In the stock ideas section, we mentioned a multinational consumer products company, as well as a restaurant technology company. And in the portfolio management section, we touched on how to calculate your risk tolerance. You know, I think this is a very, very, very important topic. I say this all the time. Investing is not just about the return you're getting. If everybody wanted to reach for the highest returns possible, they would invest in companies that are the riskiest, where they could lose all their money. Those moonshot biotech companies, those moonshot pharma companies. It's about investing for not just your return goals, for your retirement consumption goals, for your purchasing your house, your purchasing your car, your sending your kid to college goals, but also for your risk tolerance level. It's a return and risk story. And so that's why when we do portfolio reviews at KPP, it's not just about what your investments are. Everybody who does a portfolio review with us starts off by doing a risk assessment through our partner, Nitrogen. And this risk assessment goes into various questions that help us understand how much risk are you willing to take on? How much money are you seeking to gain? But more importantly, how much money are you okay with losing? Understanding that especially in these times when volatility is up and down, the market's moving up and down, what makes you comfortable? The core of investing. What type of investments are suitable for you? And so, in this week's newsletter, we talk about risk tolerance. If you're interested in subscribing to our newsletter, head over to investtalk.com. All subscribers will get the newsletter in their inbox, their email inbox, on Saturday afternoons. On the next Invest Talk, we will look into this topic, 5 estate planning tips for 2025. Kiplinger is highlighting 5 key steps for effective estate planning in 2025, including creating a will, managing digital assets, and leveraging current tax exclusions. That's Monday, but for now, I'm Luke Guerrero, ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many factors. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Art from Tucson. I'm calling about SS&C Technologies Holdings. That's ticker SSNC. I have a small position and wondering if I should add to it, seeing what you think about the company and its future prospects, and if this is a good time to invest more. Thank you. I'll listen on the podcast. Thanks for all you guys do. Appreciate it.
SS&C Technologies, Inc., that is ticker SSNC. It is a software IT services company, particularly within the healthcare and financial services space. It's about a, say, $18.6 billion market cap company. Got about $7.1 billion in debt. I guess $7 billion is the most recent quarter. They paid it down a little bit. They buy back shares. Their cash flow has improved dramatically since 2023. Their margins are pretty solid as well. Look at those margins. Sitting in the 10 to 15% range, predicting 23% net margin this year. Revenue growth, solid, 5% year over year on an annualized basis. And they really have a leading position within the software space for healthcare and financial technology. Year-to-date up 2.53%, up 2.68% today. 26.3% over the past 52 weeks. It was a stellar outperformer relative to its industry in 2024, 12.2%. And honestly, it trades at pretty reasonable forward-looking earnings, 12.5 times forward-looking earnings, price to book value 2.8 times, price to sale 3.2 times. Full disclosure, we do own this name for our clients. We like it. We've been holding on to it for quite a bit. It did reach an all-time high earlier this year at about $87 a share. What is it? $89 a share. Since fallen down back to $77.70. But most recent earnings, which they just reported, beat expectations. So overall, SSNC, we like it. Thanks for the call. Now, on Fridays, we generally make time to fit in a quick rundown of key benchmark numbers. So let me hit you with that list right now. 2-year Treasury yield is at 3.836% today. For perspective, last week it was 3.762. 40 weeks ago it was 4.882, and 78 weeks back it was 5.05. The 10-year yield was at 4.314 today. Last week it was 4.268. 38 weeks ago it was 3.921. 78 weeks back it was 4.63. Gold. Priced at $3,226 per ounce. That is $63 less than it was last week. 77 weeks ago is $1,935, and 166 weeks ago is $1,806. Silver priced at $3,204 per ounce. That's an 89-cent decrease compared with last week. 64 weeks ago, that was $2,280, and 158 weeks back, that was $2,394. Oil selling for $58.15 a barrel today. That is a $4.91 decrease compared with last week. 32 weeks ago is $67.79, and 74 weeks ago is $74.30. National average for a gallon of regular gasoline is $3.18 per gallon, a 2-cent increase compared with last week. 100 weeks ago it was $3.56, and 148 weeks ago it was $4.25. California was averaging $4.77 per gallon, a 2-cent decrease. 78 weeks ago, that was $5.32, and 154 weeks back, it was $5.87. In comparison, in Iowa, gas was averaging $2.96 per gallon today. That is $1.81 less per gallon than gas in California. All right. So we already mentioned that we've had 9 consecutive days of the S&P 500 being positive. But overall, U.S. equity funds saw $15.56 billion in outflows in the last week for the third straight week, the largest streak of redemption since December of 2024. And the reason why is, although markets are being floated in what has been relatively slightly below average volume, people are still a little skittish. So let's break down where the focus has been. Large cap funds led the exodus. They lost $14.06 billion. Small caps, $3.94 billion. Across the spectrum, multi-caps, $1.48 billion, and $1.26 billion for mid-caps. Some sector funds did break a 9-week losing streak. Financials up $502 million. Consumer staples up $433 million, maybe suggesting that investors are flowing into more defensive positions in spite of some positive economic news today. But again, I think these numbers didn't include flows from today. Bond funds saw modest net inflows over the past week, up $230 million, led by some pretty strong demand for municipal bond funds, about $1.57 billion in mortgage debt funds, about $961 million. Highlighting, again, maybe we're seeing tilts towards safety from investors. And in order to do this, where does cash come from? Well, often money market funds. So outflows of $2.87 billion in outflows. A reversal from the $24.43 billion in inflows the week prior. Again, reflecting this cash deployment. And so just as it's important to see what sectors are doing better, what industries are doing better, what companies are doing better to determine what investors are thinking, it's also important to follow cash flows in general. It is just one in a multitude of signals that can help you understand investor psychology and where the market might be headed into the future. Let's keep things going and drop in another listener question now.
Just wanted to ask you guys kind of a general money / real estate question, I guess. out of curiosity, like, you know, in today's environment, I just wanted you guys to talk a little bit on cash out refinancing. And I was also curious if you were looking to create some freed up income to, say, purchase an investment property. Is there like any sense or any scenario where borrowing against a 401 or a 457 makes sense, especially if you have 20, 25, 30 years left in your career to make that money up? So just wanted to shoot that your way, get you guys' opinions. Thanks a lot. Love your show. Have a great night.
So let's start with the cash out refinancing question. So for those of you who don't know, a cash out refinance is where you take out a larger loan on your home, you refinance your mortgage, it replaces your existing mortgage with a new bigger one, and then you take out the difference in cash. So you borrow more than you owe on your home, and the excess goes to a lump sum payment to you, and then you pay that off over time just like you would your mortgage. Oftentimes people use it for debt consolidation because they may get lower interest rates, home improvement, large expenses, maybe this investment property. And so the risk is it increases your balance and therefore increases your payments. If your financial circumstances change such that you can no longer afford it, well, then you end up in some hot water. Maybe your home's value drops. You took out too much of a loan. Then you could end up having negative equity, right? You may own more than you have, or rather than the house is worth. And so to an extent, as long as you're not doing it too dramatically, right? This is also a time of economic uncertainty. I don't know what your job is. I don't know how secure that is. You could find yourself, if really you have real assets, start to nosedive downward that you have negative equity on your home. So that's certainly something to consider. But in the right circumstances, they can be useful, as can taking a loan out on your 401k. You know, I actually like this for somebody who has a secure job that they won't be leaving. Because again, if you do leave and you can't pay back the loan immediately, you do have to pay a 10% penalty. If under 59 and a half, it is a taxable distribution. But the reason why I actually like 401k loans for people that aren't going to leave their job, who can pay it off, is because interest rates tend to be lower, but also you're paying back yourself rather than paying back to a bank, borrowing from another entity. And so if you have a short-term need, you can repay it quickly. Your career is safe and secure. They can be an excellent tool, just as cash out refinances if you use them correctly. Thanks for the call. Here's another question that came in to the comment section of our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And it's about KR and KO. It says, I'm looking at a dividend play. I'm looking at KR and KO. What are good prices to get into each of these? Well, you know, I think we answered a question about KO yesterday. That's Coca-Cola. And when we looked at Coca-Cola, we saw it was a strong company, had solid growth. Its margins were solid. Its long-term debt was fine. It's only got about $43 billion in debt on a $306 billion market cap company. And it pays a solid dividend. And the dividend's been ranging at about the 2.5% to 3.1% level for quite some time. And it's trading at its, 5-year average in terms of forward-looking earnings. And so yesterday when we were looking at Coca-Cola versus Pepsi, I was saying I'd probably go with Coca-Cola. But let's take a look at KR, which is Kroger, or for people who live in California like myself, Ralph's is the brand name out here. It's up about 30.73% over the past 52 weeks. Year to date, up 17.78%. It's a large company, about $48 billion market cap with very little debt, only about $24 billion in debt. Now, it is a grocery store, so its margins are likely to be a little bit lower, right? We're in the 0 to 2% range here. I mean, this is just how grocery stores go, how retailers go. And its sales growth is slower, about 3.8%. And its dividend yield is lower, about 1.8%, but it is trading at a cheaper valuation, again, because growth is slower, net margin is lower, and cash flow is lower, but it doesn't have a debt burden. And so, you know, I think oftentimes people think about, in quote-unquote dividend investing, which I have my qualms with, of buying something just for the dividend. The reason being because a dividend is an immediate cash distribution and taxable event versus you just selling the stock that doesn't pay a dividend at a time of your choosing. We don't need to get into that right now. Maybe we'll talk about that another time. But, you know, in this instance, I think that you go with the company that is trading around its five-year average, not above it. So that would be Coca-Cola, that is has wider margins, especially in times when there may be economic uncertainty. That's Coca-Cola, who has higher revenue growth and still doesn't have a big debt burden, even though Kroger's is better. So between the two, I would say that the better opportunity that comes with Coca-Cola. That is ticker KO, and that was Coca-Cola versus Kroger. Thanks for watching. Looks like we got plenty of time, so let's fit in another caller question, this one on AMD.
Can you tell me what might be a good entry point for AMD, Advanced Micro Device? I'm thinking about getting in there. So I would appreciate your call, and thank you for your great show. Bye.
All righty, let's take a look at AMD, that is Advanced Micro Devices. It's a semiconductor company. They have made a lot of money from their data center segment, which makes up about 49% of their revenue. Now, in Q1, AMD is scheduled to release its Q1 earnings on May 6th. So again, earnings coming up, a lot of positioning taking place. Would stay out of it, as I always suggest doing, within the 2 weeks surrounding earnings periods. Kathy Woods has been buying a bunch of shares. Kathy Woods. So take that for what it is. She doesn't tend to be right very often. And it is really just predicated upon, again, this AI secular growth theme and the growth of data centers. 49% of their business comes from data centers. Its relative outperformance has been very strong going back all the way to 2019. But as with a lot of the semi space, it's had a rough time this year, down 18.21% year to date, underperforming the industry. This year, last year, it had an abysmal year, underperformed the industry by 96.6%. And growth has really started to become more tepid. It's really slowed down. Had a lot of growth coming out of the pandemic, but hasn't looked too great since then. Its margins, a lot lower than what you see from a more well-known company like NVIDIA, right? Where you have margins in the 30s, 40s, 50s sometimes. But projected to have a net margin about 23%. This year, it is relatively cheap compared to a lot of semiconductor names. That is certainly true. But, you know, overall, I think you have to understand that semis tend to be cyclical, right? There is some hope, I would say, in that from the earnings announcements we've seen so far, there hasn't really been a step back in proposed CapEx going forward because of how monumental the race for artificial intelligence or for winning the AI race has been. Now, that isn't to say that that isn't going to slow down, right? If you actually start to see economic deterioration, well, then you would likely start to see a slowdown as well. You know, overall, you know, I'm interested. I can't really give you a conclusion right now, if I'm being honest, because of earnings coming out in the next day or so, and because they've really had a volatile business over the past year and the market is volatile. And so if you were considering getting into AMD, I would certainly wait to see what their expectation is in terms of forward-looking guidance on May 6th. So I would hold off for now on Advanced Micro Devices, that is ticker AMD. Perhaps we can squeeze in a voicemail. Not sure if we can answer before the break, but we'll try.
I would love to get your take on Hershey, symbol is HSY, and just wondering if you thought it was a reasonable company to invest in, and if so, what you thought a good buy point would be. Thank you.
Hershey, ticker HSY. I've been to two weddings in Hershey, Pennsylvania at the Hershey Museum or whatever you call it. Anyway, fun time. But the Hershey company is a confectionery company. They have, they are probably most well known for their Hershey's Kisses or their chocolates, but they're a food company. They have chocolate, sweets, mints, confectionery products. They are a very, very large company, $34 billion market cap, down about 3.54% year to date, down a bit on the back of earnings, down 16.61% over the past 52 weeks. Now, they are performing better than their industry by about 1.9% this year. We do own it for clients. We think it is a good income name. We think it's in a strong position. It's got a solid balance sheet as well. So in spite of earnings, we still like Hershey. That's ticker HSY. Headed into a break, our final break of the day, but our phone lines, they never close. So give us a call at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Chris from New York. Want to get your advice on ticker VALE, V-A-L-E. I have a little more than a half position in it. I'm down about 20%. Want to get your thoughts on if I should sell, hold, or if I should add at these levels. Thank you, and I'll listen on the podcast. Bye.
VALE, it is a Brazilian company. So this is an ADR, American Depository Receipt for a Brazilian company. And it is one of the largest mining logistics operators in Brazil. Iron ore makes up about 82% of its revenue. Other metals, about 17.4% of its revenue. But it's had a rough time, underperforming the industry since, well, about 2022, and had strong outperformance. Underperforming the S&P 500 since, well, about 2023. But year to date, it's up 5.64%. Now, recently, they declared another dividend in March. It again has shown some strength, but anytime you have a company like this, a mining company, it is always going to be predicated upon the underlying commodity. And so iron ore and nickel prices significantly influence the revenue and profitability of this firm. But the benefit being that, well, mining companies can change efficiency, shut down, reopen, and attempt to smooth the investment experience rather than just investing in the commodity itself. But, you know, it's going to have, or rather the value of this company in the market is going to be directly related to global activity. And if you have a situation where the trade war ekes out for longer than some expect, and the market certainly seems to be very hopeful recently, well, then global demand for metals for construction can certainly fall down, especially from China, which is a large purchaser of metals from this company. And so given those risks, I think that sinking more into this company right now that has been pretty weak relative to the S&P 500 for some time is inadvisable. That is VALE, Valley SA sponsored ADR. Before we head off, I wanted to briefly touch on one trade war story, and that's Japan's finance minister, Katsunobu Kato, called the country's $1.13 trillion in U.S. treasuries a card that they could play in trade talks with the Trump administration. Why does that matter? Well, Japan is the largest foreign holder of U.S. treasuries, surpassing even China, making any shift in policy or mention of a shift in policy highly market sensitive. Currently, Kato says there is no plan to sell treasuries, so signaling that you shouldn't expect a strategic unwind anytime soon, especially as Japan starts to face some pressure for its trade surplus. But the timing is important, right? You have these reciprocal tariffs that are set to come into effect in about 60 days now since the 90-day pause, maybe 70 days. Time has just been moving. And so understanding that we don't necessarily hold all the leverage, right? There, because we have a globalized economy, because of the dollar's demand globally, because of our essentially using our financial plumbing for international financing, countries such as Japan and China have cards that can potentially be played. Now, currently the market's not really reacting, right? This is, I would say, down the road. But it's interesting more than anything to me because historically, Japan's foreign policy has certainly been cautious, more forced with actions rather than with words. And so given that, I think this is starting to signal maybe a new era of more open confrontational trade diplomacy, not just from Japan, but with all of our trading partners. And so going forward, looking ahead to some of the ramifications, it's important to note how these things affect markets. Not just bond markets, but how they affect the real economy as well. I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes our final InvestTalk program for the week. Justin and I certainly thank you for listening, as we always do, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. You can get them anywhere. You can get them at Google Play, you can get them at iTunes, you can get them at Spotify. But if you're over on iTunes, if you leave us a rate and review, we'd really appreciate that. Remember, we can help you better understand your investment portfolio. We can build you a full financial plan. We can help you set up a trust and will. We can optimize your 401k. We can just be the advice givers on your shoulder anytime you need us. If you're interested in any of that, head over to investtalk.com. Sign up for a free portfolio review. You can speak to myself or Justin or another member of the team. It is, again, a free and confidential service. And like I mentioned, if you're interested in that wealth webinar we did on our new suite of strategies through custom indexing, head over to our Invest Talk YouTube channel and look on the webinar playlist. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Enjoy your weekend.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.